Bilal.
Your French,
Bilal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was just there early at a game and didn't know. So, you know, that's just the benefits of being in the gym. And I love being in the gym. I think you get more out of it than just watching film. Chris Murray is a guy that I think could fit just because he can come in and contribute. And if he's 75% of his brother, I mean, you get good value there. Tristan Vukcevic, he hasn't had like the same amount of like big season minutes as a lot of the players in this class. So he's still a little bit unknown, but he can shoot the ball and he's a pretty good athlete. And so I think that there's a spot for him.
And welcome back to the Sports Ethos Kings podcast. This is Jill, and I am joined by my co-host, Daily Sabonis, and a name that you will all recognize, Rafael Barlow. He is the NBA draft content creator, podcast host, and director of scouting at NBA Big Board. Rafael, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on. I follow both of you guys on Twitter, had some conversations. So it's like nice to like... I want to say meet you in person, but nice to meet you. E-meet you, I
virtually.
Guess. Yeah, virtual meet. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yep. Okay. So to start off, can you tell us a little bit how you got into scouting and writing in general?
Yeah, I mean, I've always like loved the draft since I was a kid. And I want to say I started my site NBA Draft Junkies back in 2016. And it was right about the time when Draft Express had merged with ESPN. And I knew how to create content. I had access to Synergy at the time. And so I just thought, like, once they left Draft Express or went to ESPN, there was a big gap in the content space as far as, like, producing video breakdowns and so on. And so I figured, like, you know what, I can do that. So I started my website and I started doing just the video breakdowns on my own back in 2016 and 17. And I mean, it definitely wasn't as crowded as it is now. I mean, now you just type in any prospect's name and there's somebody doing a video breakdown. And so I'm glad I kind of got in early. And so that's just kind of how I started. It wasn't like any formal training or anything like that. I just would go off my opinion. And I think every year I kind of got better as far as just learning what to look for. And you know, it was at first it was just like, oh, man, I really like this guy. I think he's going to be great. But, you know, as you get experience, you understand like there's positional size, there's context and so on. And so that's how I kind of got started doing the scouting thing. And then as far as like the video content, which I wish I had more time to do because I love that part of it. I just don't have the time to do it anymore. I got married and have a little baby. And then as far as writing, my minor in school is in English and then a broadcast journalism. I don't like writing, to be honest with you, just because the proofreading part of it, trying to, getting started and then just knowing that I got to put out content like three times a week. But once I get started, I'm fine. But for me, it's one of those things like I just need plenty of time just to kind of focus and put things together. And then when you have a little baby, you just, you stop, start. So I find myself having to like start writing at like midnight. And sometimes it may take me till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to finish an article and I'm tired the next day. But on one pet, I guess I don't like the getting started part of it. But once I'm finished, I'm pleased with it. But I enjoy the part of just expressing my opinion on the draft. So, I mean, I enjoy what I do, but sometimes the writing part is just, the writer's block is real, I should say.
Yeah, understandable. It was really cool to see you and your family traveling around this last year too. And I want to say too that it's always hard as a consumer to, when it comes to draft time and other things like that, to weed out, agent play and, people doing favors and things like that. But whenever I'm reading your stuff and going to your stuff, I know I'm getting legitimate information. I'm getting information about the players themselves, their personal life. You know what I mean? Like, I'm getting a full package. So I just want to say I appreciate that and what you do and all the time you spend and you're traveling and even more so than you've been doing, it seems like, the last couple of years. I know you were in Europe, and doing different ones. So it was really cool.
Yeah, the traveling has definitely gone down since
The baby.
Yeah, since the baby. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I enjoy it. And I mean, of course, you know, there are times where, I mean, I've had agents offer to pay me money, and I'm not in a position to like turn down money. But at the same time, I won't take it just because I'm like, this is like crafted or this is scripted and so on. And so and then I just wouldn't feel like, you know, I just wouldn't feel like I'm being genuine to myself and to my audience if I'm like writing paid pieces. And I mean, a lot of times if I'm writing an article about a guy, like I went to Atlanta and I wrote about this guy, Vincent Valerio Bolden, a few weeks ago. I mean, that was out of my own pocket. I just felt, I don't know, it was just something about his story. And I had been tracking him for a couple of years. And so that was like a piece that, I mean, I lost money to write it. So, but yeah, I mean, it's all genuine. It's coming from me.
Yeah. And I think it's impressive too, that I see, you know, pieces that you do write or videos that you put out and No Ceilings and Adam and different guys like that, where you're showcasing guys that we're finding out about now, but you were writing pieces on them, you know, a year and a half ago. So it just goes to show, you know, the work you guys are putting in and that, you know, you're on the ground floor and really, you're really kind of before the time of, you know, now we're seeing the Ben Shepherds and different things of the world, but you know, you can go out and find articles that you guys did, you know, a year ago. So
yeah,
I think that's really cool to see.
Yeah. I try to be in the gym as much as I can. And sometimes when you're in the gym, you may find somebody that you weren't even looking for. And like, I've been talking about like the past few weeks.
I was going
like,
to say,
Bilal,
French, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was just there early at a game and didn't know. So, you know, that's just the benefits of being in the gym. And I love being in the gym. I think you get more out of it than just watching film.
Yeah, I was going to say the Bilal one. That was hearing your podcast and stuff on him and your, you know, what you guys thought when you first saw him and then the trajectory that it's taken. You just never know. And it's really cool to kind of see how that works. But
yeah, couldn't have predicted that. So, yeah.
Okay. And then before we start on the three prospects I'll ask you about for the Kings, mm-hmm. I know we had, there was a deadline day today. Was there anybody that you were surprised on that fell off or that maybe stayed?
Yeah, Bobby Klempman. That was really weird to me. And I've been busy today, so I haven't had a chance to like read up behind it. But only thing I've seen is that he pulled out and then he is going to Australia, which is good for Australia in a sense, because I feel like they were the most impacted by NIL in the G League. I mean, the year they got LaMelo Ball and RJ Hampton, those were like two of the top guys in their class to go to Australia. Then all of a sudden the NIL and the Ignite come along. So I thought that kind of killed them. But for them to end up getting like a guy like Klempman and then they got a kid out of high school, AJ Johnson, that's supposed to be really good. And I mean, they got, you know, Ryan Rupert is going to be a first round pick. So I thought that was a big get for them. But I thought it was weird because like the different agents and people that I talked to, they had teams that they thought were the ones that made him a promise. And it was like OKC. And then once OKC traded the 37th pick, it was like, okay, it's not OKC. And then you start hearing about it was Utah or Indiana, the teams that have, you know, multiple first round picks. And so now I got to do some digging and find out, was it like a promise? And then it wasn't a promise. And then I even had an agent tell me that he thought he was making a mistake, like shutting it down for a promise, because he thought he had the skill set to where if he did the workouts, he could rise in the first round. So the agent was like, either he has a promise that's pretty high, but he didn't understand like why you would like take a promise to be like a late first round pick or an early second round pick. So now the situation looks even weirder that he's going to Australia. Yeah. So maybe that was the team that promised him, you know?
Yeah, but it seems like there's some, I haven't got to see the whole list, but it seems like there's some European prospects that have dropped too. So that could bode well for some of the local college players here, and, you know, who were, you know, maybe now will bump up in the second round or or those two ways, and how that works. But okay, so we'll start off with your as much as you can, because we know at 24 there's a wide variety of names where guys can rise, they can fall. Who will be available, we're not sure. But do you have a couple of your favorite prospects that you think might be around at the 24 range for the Kings?
Yeah, I think the first name that comes to mind is Kobe Jones from Xavier. He is one of the more ready to contribute players in this class. He's very solid all the way around. He rebounds, he passes, he scores. The concern is the shooting. Even though he shot about 38% from three, it's like 37-38%. The volume of attempts weren't really high, but he did improve from the high 20s to high 30s this year. But I think he has like the size and the tools to just come in and like be a connector or be a glue guy. I think with the Kings, it's, well, one, it's just a weird situation for Sacramento fans because, well, what was it, 16 years? So right, you're used to like picking in the lottery. So picking this late is a different dynamic.
Guys usually not wanting to work out for us. We're now in the 20s. Everyone will come work out for us.
Yeah, so it's a different dynamic. And so on one hand, it's not an older team. So it's, you know, so obviously they want to add young pieces. But then again, it's like, are they in, we need guys that are coming in to win now, or we need guys that are more so long-term prospects. So I imagine it's just a wide range of guys that they're bringing in. I know this may be cliche, but Chris Murray is a guy that I think could fit just because he can come in and contribute. And if he's 75% of his brother, I mean, you get good value there. And one of the reasons why I'm like pro Chris Murray going to a good team is because his age. I look at it as a positive in a sense, because if you are a team in the late first round, or even Sacramento, for example, and if you select him, he'll be 23 on opening night. By the end of his contract, he'll be, what, 27-ish? You're basically getting a guy at the beginning years of his prime on a rookie deal. I think that's an absolute steal. So I wouldn't be afraid of his age, especially if I'm a team that's picking in the back of the first round. I'm looking for guys that can come in and contribute right away.
That makes sense. And then just from those two players, what do you think their best NBA like ready skill is, or their swing skill? What do you think it'll be in the league?
I think for Kobe, it's just his versatility. I think he's someone that you can put him on the floor next to a Fox. And then if De'Aaron is off the ball, or if a team is trapping De'Aaron, you can give him the ball. He can catch it in the middle of the floor and make plays. I mean, you look at Denver's team, which I think a lot of people are going to copy Denver, but they have so many guys that even if you trap Jokic, they have so many guys that can make plays. From Aaron Gordon's a good passer to Bruce Brown is like playing like this weird hybrid position. And so Kobe Jones is someone that I think he can play next to any like ball dominant or primary scorer, and he can make you pay for trapping because he's such a good passer and playmaker. Then he rebounds. So I think he's one of the more safer guys. And then as far as Chris, I mean, he defends multiple positions. He can knock down open shots, and he's just matured, and he can come in and contribute. Like I said, if he's 75% of his brother, I mean, that's a win at picking late in the first round.
So back to Kobe Jones, what would you say his NBA comp is, best case scenario?
Oh, man, that's tough. I'm trying to think of someone. I haven't, that just does a little bit of everything that just contributes to winning. I had one in mind, too, and now I'm just lost for it. All right, you know what? And maybe it's like a recency bias, not exactly like one-to-one, but like a Bruce Brown for Denver. Bruce was a point guard in college, and I think he fell to the second round because he was like, he didn't fit into this box. That's like, he's not a great shooter. He's not a 3-and-D guy. Even though he's used to playing with the ball in his hands, he's not like your primary. And then he got to Brooklyn, he was like playing like the four and he was a screener. But he just was a connective tissue that does everything that a team needs to contribute to winning. And so I think with Kobe, he can be that guy because even though he's about, I mean, the size is good. He's a really good rebounder for a size. Probably, in my opinion, one of the top two or three wing rebounders in this class. So he will go out there and compete and fight on the glass. But he's also a really good passer. So I think he can be that connective tissue. And he's a better shooter right now than Bruce Brown was when he left. So maybe not like the screener or natural, I guess I won't say natural, but Bruce Brown was playing like small ball five sometimes. He may not be able to offer like that much versatility, but I do think he can play two, three, and if you want to go really, really small, some four.
Okay. And I know I'm kind of throwing this off the cuff here, but we just got dropped some names that came into Sacramento today. Okay. And two of them were Sidy Sissoko and yep. Maxwell Lewis. Do you have anything that you can share on those two? Because I know I want to say at the kind of the start of the draft process, we were seeing Sissoko a lot in the first, and now we're kind of seeing him slide down to the second. So I'm just curious. Do you think it's just because he's so raw? Like where, or it's just more one-sided his defense right now, and there's just not as much offensively that might be. Why he's kind of dropping a little bit.
Yeah, I don't get it. Honestly, I think it's a lot of follow the leader. If, you know, a big publication drops a guy, then everybody else is going to follow. Also think it's a combination of his French national teammate, Bilal Coulibaly, moving up. And so when he moves up, somebody else is going to move down. It's kind of like a domino effect. But he finished the year strong. Like, he really finished the year strong. And what I like about Sidy is I've been following him for years. So I followed him back when he played in Spain last year. I thought he was like a big point guard. He had the passing skills and, you know, the size and the defensive potential. But something clicked with him this year where he started like really attacking the rim and going to the basket. I think he was second in the G League out of all the wing players in dunks. And so that just kind of shows how aggressive he is. And most of those finishes at the rim came in the second half of the year. So it was like, it was something that switched. And so I think with his size and his ability to get downhill and his passing and his defense, I think that he is someone that is probably a little bit under the radar in a sense. And I mean, the Ignite was a good situation for him as far as developing, but we didn't really get a chance to see like the real point forward skills out of him. So I like him. And he's actually training in Dallas where I live. So I've had a chance to watch him work out. And then Max Lewis, I had a chance to watch him work out in Chicago at the Combine. And I'm not saying this just because I'm talking about him on your show. Like his, I know it's just a workout, but it was one of the best workouts that I've seen. I've seen a gazillion workouts, which as far as like the number of shots that he made. And I put it like this, his workout was so good, and I filmed it just for like an interview and a piece on NBA Big Board. But his workout was so good that his trainer asked me to send him the raw footage so he could send to different teams. And so the raw footage has misses and everything right on there. Because, you know, I'm a videographer, so if I make a workout video for a guy, obviously there's not going to be any misses. And even if a guy shoots like 100 for 500, those 100 makes are all going to be on there, so it looks good. But he shot the ball so well that I don't know what teams have seen it, but the raw footage, the whole probably 45-minute workout with every miss and is on there. That's how confident that his agent or the person that's playing his agent right now felt about his shooting. And so he just has to –
I feel like we've heard nothing but good things based on his workouts with teams too. Mm-hmm. I mean,
yeah. The knock on him, and I talked to him about it, was he went to Pepperdine. Pepperdine wasn't good. And so a lot of teams are concerned if he was a guy that was just putting up bad number or good numbers on a bad team. So that's kind of the knock on him. But I've also heard someone say that with his talent and skill set, if he went to a blue blood school or Duke or Kansas or something like that, we'd be talking about him as a surefire lottery pick. So just the concern is he wasn't winning. And I forgot the number. I had it earlier, but I don't think he won like 15 games in his 2 years. I'll just be generous and say it was 20. But I don't think he won like 20 games in his 2 years at Pepperdine. So he has to shed the good stats, bad team label.
Yeah, and I'll say if there's probably a team where he would land on, considering we have two Pepperdine people with the Kings and Doug Christie and Kessler Edwards now, if anyone's going to be able to get any kind of info that they would probably know, realistically, that kind of stuff of what's going on.
I never thought about that.
Back end stuff, yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah, yeah. So,
so he'd fit right in there.
Yeah, yeah. It is weird because it's like Pepperdine. It's not a school that you hear about. And then when you have two guys with Pepperdine ties with the Kings, it does make sense there. Yeah, you're right about that.
Yep. Okay. And then next up, do you have 2 to 3 favorite sleepers for the second round?
Yeah. So it was weird because I think the second round, I honestly feel like 15 through 25 is going to be fluid. Then I also feel like maybe 25 through 40 could be interchangeable. So my sleepers for the second round would be, I like Tre'Quavion Smith. I'm a big fan of Tre'Quavion. He's the one that I thought if he would have stayed in the draft last year, he would have been a late first round pick. He's actually kind of being penalized in a sense because he's, you know, last year he kind of came out of nowhere. It's like Leonard Miller. I think they have similar situations. It kind of came out of nowhere towards the end of the year. And at least on like social media, they were like the favorites. And then they actually got better this year and they're not being talked about as much. So, you know, he's not necessarily the flavor of the month, but he came back to NC State for a sophomore year to win because they were one of the worst teams last year. And then he led them to the NCAA tournament. His assist numbers went up, but the inefficiency is a little scary. Then he's small. I think he's like 165 pounds, so that's pretty concerning in the NBA. But I do think that he could be like a Jordan Poole type guy, a guy that can come off the bench and just provide instant offense. And I do think that he'll be better in a reduced role where he doesn't have to create every single shot for his team to be successful. And he's a really good knockdown shooter off the catch. So he's a guy that comes to mind, Trayce Jackson Davis from Indiana. You can look at the numbers and make a case to say he's the most productive outside of Wembanyama, but just on paper, he was the most productive player in this draft as far as stats. The numbers were great. He rebounded. He passes. I think he's one of the better passers. A little undersized because he's measured at 6'9", and he doesn't space the floor. So there are some concerns about that, but I think that he could be a sleeper that could go. I mean, if he's like the one of the first picks in the second round, I wouldn't be surprised by that. Or if he's like kind of falls because he doesn't space the floor, that wouldn't shock me either. Julian Phillips from Tennessee, he was highly touted coming into his freshman year. Struggled with efficiency, but he showed some flashes as a defender, so he could be a guy that you could develop over, you know, in the G League. And I think the Kings have like a great relationship with Stockton. And so it's on one hand, it's close by, but then again, you factor in the traffic and it's, it might not be as close as it seems geographically, but I think that would be a good fit. And then Tristan Vukcevic, the Serbian, well, it's a weird situation because his situation is weird because I want to say like his dad might be Serbian, his mom might be Greek, but he was born in Italy, so it's kind of hard to put him in to a nationality. I think he has like he could actually represent like 4 different countries.
Wow!
With his passport, because I know he was born in one country, and his parents have different nationalities, so that's 3. And I don't know. Anyway, I'll just say the European. And so he had a really good combine. He's really unknown in a sense because You know, a lot of people hadn't heard of him until he went to the combine and he had a good game where he had like 12 points in the first quarter.
That was wild. He was hitting, I mean, he looked like Dirk hitting following jumper.
Yeah. And it's and he's the one that I've been following for a while, but he started off playing, well, not started off, but he played in Real Madrid system and he played on their youth teams and he was good. And then last season I went to watch him play. And he's playing for Real Madrid. So there was just not a lot of minutes for him. And I remember going to a game and the only thing I was able to watch from him was like how he warmed up. And then like when he got in with 2 minutes left in the second quarter. And so once he switched to Partizan in Serbia, he started playing a little bit more. So even now he hasn't had like the same amount of like big season minutes as a lot of the players in this class. So he's still a little bit unknown. But he can shoot the ball, and he's a pretty good athlete, and so I think that there's a spot for him.
Yeah, and I want to say it was interesting. Seems like his team came out today and was saying that they want him to have a roster spot. They don't want him mm-hmm. being drafted to go stashed. To the G League. So
yeah.
So I think that'll be interesting to see where he falls.
Well, he has the same
maybe
agent
because
as
of that.
So his okay. agent got some power right now, yeah. you know, so, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's,
but he looks good.
yeah, definitely looks good. Yeah. I mean, like I said, he's somebody that I've been watching for a while, but it was just kind of really hard to evaluate him like it is some European prospects because I always tell people there's no college basketball in Europe. So it's like, in one hand, you're going from playing with your peers to basically skipping that middle step. And so he was someone that went from being really good with his peers. All of a sudden he's playing for Real Madrid, which is a team that is trying to compete for EuroLeague championships every year. So they don't really have developmental minutes for a teenager. So he was kind of stuck behind some really good guys. And then when he went to Partizan this year, he was able to show a little bit. So he's like, you know, just a very common situation for a European prospect, which makes them really hard to evaluate sometimes if they're not in a situation that's like really built for them, like in Victor's case.
Are there any defensive concerns with him, or do you feel like he's solid on that end?
He's definitely like physically weak, so he'll need to like bulk up and get stronger. So yeah, I think there are some defensive concerns right now, but I think it's just, you know, it's going to be a process to once he gets stronger and then just has to adapt to like the NBA game, which is very similar to the rest of the players in this class. And then he may not have the same, I mean, you can say he played professional, but he may not have like the same game minutes as some of his peers in this class, guys that were playing 30 minutes per game in college and being featured. So there may be a big adjustment period there.
Were you able to see James Nnaji out there when you were in yep. Europe? I know they're not similar in styles, but where do you think he is in terms of, do you think he'll come in and he's kind of ready for an NBA role? Cause that's another guy where I've seen in that late 20s, but also we could go anywhere. Like you mentioned from 30 to 40, like it's that mm-hmm. wide range.
Yeah, so what's interesting about Nnaji was he was someone that I had watched the year before I spent all of 21-22 season in Europe. And so I thought Nnaji was a guy to just keep an eye out on for this 23 draft. So I went and watched him play a couple times with his peers, and I was just not impressed. He was physically bigger and more athletic than everyone else. But he was someone that just didn't look good. I actually wrote an article on NBA Draft Junkies about how I was trying to take a train from Barcelona to wherever they were playing at, and it ended up taking the wrong train, and it cost me like, I don't know, like $178 to take an Uber. And I was kind of just disappointed with how he played. And I was like, again, I saw the physical tools, but I'm like, man, if this guy is only scoring like 8 points, how is he ready for the NBA when he's scoring 8 points against his peers? So I went to watch him a couple times, just nothing spectacular. But then they had a situation where there were multiple players that were out with injuries and COVID. And then he was forced to play for Barcelona senior team. And then he goes out there, he looks like a first round pick. And so I think he really benefited from like the spacing where all he had to do was roll, and he had like better guards to get him the ball. And it just kind of like taught me a lesson that if a guy is like an athletic big and he's playing with his peers and they're trying to feature him and give him the ball and give him low post touches, then his flaws are going to really show if he's not that type of player, which won't be his role in the NBA. But when he had a simplified role of screen, rebound, run the floor, block shots with better spacing and better playmakers, I mean, he legitimately looked like an NBA player. So that was the lesson that I learned. So I said a lot to say this. He's like Jalen Duren in a sense to me, where he's just like, how are you 18 with muscles on top of muscles? Like, I mean, like, I understand, like, there's weight rooms, but were you living in the weight room? I mean, think about it. 18 years old, yeah, built like that. They didn't have 18-year-olds that looked like that when I was in high school. So yeah, he's just physically mature, and he has had the benefit of playing like really, really high-level basketball in Europe. And I think in a simplified NBA role, he could be, you know, at least someone that can crack a rotation early in his career.
Okay. And then lastly, I know it's, we're, what are we, 10, 11 days out of the draft. Are you, do you have any kind of feelings about anyone you think might be rising, dropping? Do you think we'll be in, you know, we always get some surprises, but do you have a feeling of there might be more or less than the usual?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of trades. And so I think there are going to be several players that are going to fall just because the way the order is right now, it's going to be totally different. And so some guys, just for like fit, they're going to end up falling. I'll give you an example. Like, I think with Scoot, you know, he was a guy that we thought was going to go number two, a surefire number two. And then the way the lottery kind of panned out is that it's not a good fit for him, at least in my opinion. At least, well, he won't have the keys like we thought in Charlotte or Portland. And so I think that there's going to be other situations like that, to where, like, let's say, you know, everybody talks about, oh, well, Utah needs a guard. Well, if they make multiple trades, then, you know, somebody that we thought was going to go there is not going to end up there. So I think it's going to be like a busy day as far as trades. But the player that I think is probably the biggest riser is OMAX, Olivier Maxence Prosper. I think that he made himself a lot of money at the combine, and actually had him on my podcast, and it'll air on Tuesday, that at the combine, he showed what he can do, like with the ball in his hands. While at Marquette, he was on a team with two really good passers, so he was mostly used as a cutter and defender, and the three-point shooting was okay, it was respectable, but I thought that he's shown that he can really knock down open shots and some ball handling stuff. So he's the guy that I think could go from 2 months ago was projected to go in the 40s or 50s to, I think he can go in the teens. And then Bilal Coulibaly, I think he's going to end up being a top 10 pick. And so, which is crazy, because 6 weeks ago he was maybe he's even in the draft, to now I think he's going to go top 10 just because of, he's had big games on a big stage in the playoffs. So I think those are the two biggest risers as far as guys that could fall. And I don't have any knowledge of it, but I wonder, like, if Bryce Sensenbaugh is the guy that falls, because I haven't heard anything about him. I even talked to a team that has picks in the range where he's supposed to go, and he's like, he hasn't even been brought in for a workout. I know he's had, like, multiple knee injuries in high school. So I wonder if, like, the medicals don't come back like as a red flag. Could he be the one that falls, simply because I think he's had two knee surgeries? And I've had guys tell me, when you go to the combine, they're picking and prodding at every part of your body. Like, one guy told me, they asked him, did he have an elbow injury? He was like, yeah, when I was 11. And he was like, there were teams that were concerned about it. And then I had another guy tell me that when he went through the testing, there was like some concern that he got scratched in the eye. And he said he got scratched in the eye playing a pickup game. And I guess he wore like goggles for a few weeks. And then he got red flagged by some teams because they were just like, You know, if you get poked in the eye one more time, it could be really damaging. So they do a lot of work. And so I think there could be some guys that fall if they've had like a pre-existing injury.
Are the concerns about Bryce Sensabaugh's defense like real or?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, I spoke to somebody today from a team and I was just kind of asking like about what range. And he said, well, you know, a lot of teams are looking for defenders, like wing defenders, especially once even like the, like he was, the way he worded it was even like the teams that are in the lottery are trying to win now. Like teams were either had three or four bad years in a row and they're trying to win. And then you have teams like Dallas and New Orleans and Oklahoma City in the lottery and they're trying to win now. And then once you get past that, you have playoff teams. He was like, it could be tough for him because teams are just so worried about non-defenders at the wing. So I think that is a concern.
Interesting. Well, I mean, and that's something that we know that the Kings need, but I mean, I could very well see them, you know, going all into their offense too. And it's just like, keep getting better on the offensive side. If that, like, you know, defender's there that, or at least you don't think that that's there in that range.
Yeah, I think it's tough because if you look at it, like how many guys are really good shooters and defenders? Like it's either you're one or the other, right? So you look at a guy like Omax, teams are like, oh yeah, he's ready to come in and contribute. But they may say, well, he shot in the low 30s from three. You look at Sensenball, you look at Jet Howard, even Max Lewis. So like, we're not concerned about the shooting. It's can they come in and defend? So I think, you know, it's either or. I don't think there's anybody that, unless you put like Chris Murray in a sense, but I don't think he can knock down threes and he can defend, but he's not like the 3-and-D like wing you're looking for. He's like a 3-and-D four. So that makes it kind of tough.
Which skill do you think is harder to develop?
Shooting or defense?
Yeah.
Definitely. That was great. So I think you can work on your shooting. I guess I would say defense.
So do you think – go ahead.
I was going to say, well, defense, because sometimes you may not have the physical tools to be a good defender. So I think you can – I mean, I guess you can say if you don't have good touch, you'll never be able to be a good three-point shooter. But I do think, like, defense is a combination of, like, effort and energy and also, like, physical tools. Like, if you don't have really good feet or you're not, like – long, you could have some issues, but then again, you'd have to just be like really, really smart at cutting off angles. So I would say defense.
Yeah. And even then, like, if you don't, can you be a team defender? Like, because I mean, we see plenty of players who aren't necessarily great individual defenders, but they have, you know, the basketball knowledge or at least or the intuition where they can be that team defender. I mean, I feel like a lot of times teams are looking more so for the team defender just because, like you said, there aren't a lot of those highlight, you know, multi both way players out there.
Yeah. I mean, I look at Jokic, for example. He's a guy that, like, the knock was, oh, he's too slow. You can put him in pick and roll. Can he defend in a playoff series in space? And I think he's done an excellent job on the defensive end. He's good at like cutting off angles. I mean, he's not playing above the rim. He's not blocking shots. And then Steph Curry is another guy that comes to mind. Like, you would think like teams would just pick on him and isolate him, but he's such a good team defender. And even being a good team defender means being able to like run away from getting screened. So you don't have to, you know, guard the guy that you know, you don't give the offense a favorable matchup. And I think that's like the funny part about Steph being a good team defender is he knows, like, look, I know they're trying to pick on me, but I'm getting out the way so I can make sure that, you know, we get Draymond on this guy instead of me. So, yeah, I mean, team defense is just as important really as being a good individual defender, because I've seen guys that are good individual defenders, but they're so focused on shutting their man down that they're not there helping their teammates out. So. But I'd say defense is harder than shooting.
Last question for me. In the past 3 or 4 years, which NBA player like has totally surprised you as far as their development and you didn't expect them to do that well or not? That sounds disrespectful. You were just surprised.
I guess the easy one for you, and it's a name you guys are familiar with, Tyrese Haliburton. Haliburton was a guy, and I even look back at my notes, and I get why I was concerned, but it's maybe just a preference. I prefer a De'Aaron Fox type point guard than a Tyrese Haliburton. I want my guy to be able to get in the lane whenever he wants to get in the lane. I want a guy that's like a good athlete and can pass and shoot off the dribble. And when I look at Haliburton, looking at his game, and I don't feel like my assessment was wrong. He's not like great at putting pressure on the rim, has a weird looking shot. So he's not necessarily going to be able to like be a really good shooter off the dribble. I knew he was a good passer. I knew he had versatility. And I thought he was like a connector. I didn't think he was an all-star. And so I feel like that's a blind spot for me because I probably would miss on him every time. So, because again, I like my point guard to get downhill and collapse the defense and kick out and be able to finish at the rim and so on. And Tyrese Haliburton is just a guy that is just really good at being a connector, but he's also like a leader and he's knocking down shots. So yeah, that was so easy for me because I was totally wrong about him.
That's hilarious. Amazing.
I still had him
a lot of people were though. Like, yeah. How many teams were?
Yeah. I mean, I had him as a lottery pick, but I think at the time I thought like, oh yeah, he would be good. I think this was before Phoenix had Chris Paul. So I was like, he would be good playing with Devin Booker. He's a guy that complements everybody's player. And even he played a complimentary role in Sacramento and he was good. But then once he got his own team, it's like, okay, this dude is an all-star. So yeah, I was totally wrong on that one.
Yeah. Phoenix passing on that one still. Cause you were right. It was before they had anybody mm-hmm. and now they're out still looking for that. And they could have had that pairing.
Yeah.
And still brought Chris Paul.
Yeah. I mean, again, like, is he an all-star if he stays in Sacramento? I don't think so. I mean, the trade just worked out for both teams. It was like one of the few times a trade is a win-win. And I feel like the Kings management just got totally like blasted for it. And I talked to a guy that works for the Kings at the Combine. I was like, I don't think fans realize that this is a new front office. Like, everybody just assumed that was the same old Kings that made that trade. And like I said, it's one of the few trades that's just a win for both teams.
And then there's a lot of people that just didn't even watch the Kings until they made the playoffs. So it is what it is. It's hard to clean off that rep. You know what I mean? The stink off you. So
Haliburton was getting DNPs when he got traded. So yeah, it just shows how much people were not know about the Kings.
Yeah. But you guys got a great fan base. That's the thing that I'm like, you guys got a great fan base, 16 years, no playoffs. And there's like Sacramento Kings podcast. You know what I mean? Like,
you know, what's crazy though is for as long as they've been here, we've only had 9 500 seasons. Like, we're all still here, but in our entirety of the, 35 plus years, we've had 9 winning seasons.
Wow. Like, and how many were in the Weber?
8. 9. This was the first one. Like,
oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, in that Adelman era, he was like the sole coach that got like over 500. I think Gary St. Jean might have had one. But Adelman had the rest, and then Mike Brown was the next man up. But yeah, well, so like it's just been since 85 to now, like it's just hasn't been a lot of winning in general. And so it's when it comes, it's like we're full force.
I guess thinking back at it, like, yeah, I remember like the Lionel Simmons days and and Kenny Smith and Bobby Hurley and all that. And then, you know, it's like that era in the late 90s. And then I guess, right. Well, wasn't there like after that with the Artest and Bonzi team?
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
And then they tried to pay Bonzi and Bonzi turned down. It was like, I think it was upwards of like $42 million or something like that. And he said that was his one like regret out of anything was turning down that deal to and leaving and not taking it.
Yeah.
But
wow.
Yeah,
I never thought of it like that. That's crazy. That's crazy. Wow,
it is. All right. Well, thank you again for giving us your time and giving us almost an hour. So that's great.
Oh yeah, no problem.
I enjoyed it. We appreciate it and keep up the great content, and we can't wait to see what else you have in the next 10 days leading up to it. I'm excited for the OMAX one that you said is coming tomorrow. Is that what you said?
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Yep. So I was gonna put it out today. I just haven't had time to like edit it. But no, I enjoy like reading your tweets, like both of you guys, and thanks. So on. So like and it's funny because there's not like a face, you know what I mean, on both of your profiles in a sense. So I mean, it is a face, but yours is a cartoon character, Jill.
Right.
And then so it's like cool, like I said, to virtually meet you guys. So anytime you want me on, just let me know. I can make it happen.
Likewise, no, and we appreciate everything. Thank you.
And then is there anything you want to drop for listeners of where they can find you in case they don't already know?
Yeah, NBA Big Board, the newsletter. It's just a newsletter, big boards and mock drafts and draft buzz. And then I have the Locked On NBA Big Board podcast, which is 5 days a week. So if a person likes draft content, you can get 7 or 8 forms of draft content from me in a week. So I'm pretty easy to find.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Thank you guys. Thank you for pushing it back a little bit for me. And then if you want me on like after the draft, or if you're going to summer league or something like that, let me know.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
And good luck on sleep.
Are you guys going to summer league?
I might be going.
Okay.
My sister lives there, so I try to go out there every year. So it just depends on work this year, but there's like a 70% chance we'll be there.
Okay.
Same.
It's weird because you guys don't have like an exciting top 10 pick that you want to like go check out.
Right? But as Kings fans,
we have the California Classic too. So it's like you can see some people now before too. Yeah.
But as Kings fans, we always fall in love with all of our players up to the 15th man. So.
Yep.
We're like, sign this guy to Stockton. Like, keep this guy.
So,
You'll find it. Yeah, there's the two. Now that you have the extra two-way, we'll be, you know, yelling for three guys for two-ways. Yeah.
Okay, well, yeah, let me know. I'll definitely be there.
Okay.
Fantastic. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Have a good one. No problem.
Take care. You.